The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
We start throwing out different names, and the word spectrum came up. And I said, I'm not sure what that means, but if it's anything close, that is it. And I went back to my office and opened the dictionary, and I looked up the word spectrum, and it said, images which form displays, colors emanating from the prism, anything colorful under the sun. I said, that's it.
First ball game with your folks, to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph, to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling that we all get that brings us all back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel. Our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DePachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And joining me from his sports cave in Villanova, he is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founder of the Museum of Sports, and author of the new book just out, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld.
You make that book sound so good. I might buy one.
Like I said,
that'll double the sales, right?
It was so nice. I bought it twice.
I have to tell you, I've been watching basketball, college and professional in Philadelphia since 1948, maybe 47, Warriors, and then the Sixers. And I have to tell you, the other night I was so pumped for the Boston Celtics game because we hate Boston and they dominated us for so many years. But this year we won the first two times we played them. Worst game I have seen in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Down by 48. They were down by 51, I believe. They lost by 48 by halftime. I turned over. I tuned into the Villanova-Providence game, which was just getting underway a little later. And I thought, please don't lose because I can't take two losses. Thank God. Villanova came through with a gut game at Providence. Providence was 14-0 this year at home, leading the Big East, and they shut that crowd down.
Yep, exactly. Well, you know, it's you can't have two losses in one night because there's only
I've had three
in the house. From her sports porch for the first time in 2022 on this bizarre 65 degree day here in mid-February in South Jersey, Museum of Sports Show Director of Community Outreach, Susan Baxter. Hiya, Susan.
Hey, we're keeping the dismal Philly sports alive because being close only counts in hand grenades and horseshoes, because the Flyers almost had the win against the Penguins the other night, but they blew it.
Well, I like that you're hiding the Flyers flag behind you.
It's up behind your head.
We don't want to show the Flyers. They're worse than the Sixers the other night.
Yeah, it's the only one that's not moving in the breeze. It could be dead.
True. They a little bit.
It's stiff.
Two goal lead, and they blow it. Okay, exactly. Go ahead.
Well, coming up today on today's show, he's known as the Riverton Rifle and the Chiefs. Flyers Stanley Cup winner Reggie Leach is going to be joining us here at the Museum of Sports show. And at 4:40, our own king of sports collectibles with the world's most valuable sports memorabilia collection is back from, where was he, Disney World, Nick DePaccia Jr. But up first, you see him down there in the Zoom box. It was one of these cases, Lou, every week after your book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, was released, you've been getting calls, texts, emails from folks who've got, you know, wacky, nutty, crazy memories from their time growing up, going to see concerts and sporting events and who knows what else at the Spectrum. And so you've been telling us some of those stories as they surface. And this gentleman right down there has got one of them. I guess we could call him Spectrum Superfan. And someone who has a little trouble keeping his concert down, Mr. John Pisa from Naples, Florida. Hiya, John.
I'm doing outstanding. And my nickname is Philly John. I got tossed that name when I was living in St. Louis, when sports radio started up there. I would call in and they gave me the name, actually the St. Louis University Billikens broadcaster, Bob Ramsey, because I spoke to him about Philly sports all the time. I got Philly John and that is stuck. So
you're one of those guys, a long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah. I never used that line, though.
You just called in and said, hi, it's Philly John.
I had nothing better to do but to call in and offer my opinions on sports in St. Louis about Philadelphia sports. So
yeah, I'm sitting in my Barca lounger in my boxers. So
Correct.
Hey, so I got to ask you, John, you know, we've been promoting Lou's book for, you know, the better part of last year. Were you starting to get a little excited when you heard it was come out, or how did you find out about Lou's
book? 100%. Well, Lou had said years ago he was working on a book, and so when it finally came out, my daughter got it for me as a surprise, not such a surprise, but Christmas present. I told her this would be a good book for me. She picked one up for her husband, and it was just fantastic. Obviously, knowing Lou like I do, but being of an age where the Spectrum was born and I cut my teeth there, concerts and Sixer games and Flyers, like so many else. But the book was just such a great trip down memory lane. Things I had forgotten about that had happened, things that I was part of that he mentioned in the book. And I'm one of millions there, but it was a special place. And Lou put it all together. It was fantastic.
I got one more question for you, and I know Lou's got a bunch of stuff for you, but and it's interesting when I go back and look for those clips, and that clip we played off the top of the show is from a kind of a Spectrum retrospective just before it was demolished. And it was Lou talking about how he came up with the name Spectrum. And there was an interview with Ray Didinger and a couple other folks. And the one thing that several other people said is the Spectrum was such a palace compared to all the other, you know, quasi dumps that people went to for sports venues and concerts, or what passed for concert venues in Philly for decades. I mean, you were how old when the Spectrum came online, and what was it about the Spectrum? Because I grew up in Connecticut. I knew about the opening of the Spectrum.
Right. So I'm 12 years old when the building opens up, and then I go to my first event, which was a Flyers game. And I had been going to Connie Mack Stadium with my dad and Franklin Field for some early Eagles games, but obviously before the Vet. But the Spectrum was brand new, and that hockey is what got me hooked first time. And I'll never forget, Gary Dornhofer scored a winning goal, and we all erupted, and all perfect strangers were hugging, and I don't know if the high five was there, but man, we were on it. And I never experienced that at either an Eagle or Phillies game. I just thought that was the coolest thing around. And I'm probably about 14 years old at that time, and it was just amazing.
Did your parents know you were going to these things?
Well, that one my father took me to. Now, the concerts, they sort of knew I went to, but, you know, I can't tell all of those stories. I'll save that for my book, you know. God bless them. They knew half the things that was going on.
What was your first concert?
First concert was Jefferson Airplane.
And
that
was, wow. Okay.
Oh, that would have been a good one.
Yeah, it was a great one. That was a great one. Yep.
Lou, I know you got a bunch of stuff for John.
No, I don't really have anything. Oh,
okay. Good night now, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, John, that Gary Dornhofer goal, the loudest cheer I ever heard in my days at the Spectrum was Dornhofer scoring in overtime against Minnesota, against Cesar Maniago.
There you go.
It was a hard fought. We came from behind or something, and he went down that left side and unleashed that shot. A bullet shot that into the net, and the crowd erupted. I have never heard a crowd scream like that. And that is, there's a statue of him scoring a goal and like tripping over somebody called Score that is outside Xfinity Live now. It used to be outside the Spectrum. Yeah. Beautiful statue. Yeah, if that's the same game you're talking about, you saw a hell of a game.
Yeah, it was just, again, I never saw so many adults go so crazy, you know. And again, I was at some pretty good Philly games and Eagle games, but that was the best part about the Flyers at that point, where, you know, the Eagles were down, Phillies were down, Sixers, and it just took a bunch of these kids from Canada, came down, and once they got their act rolling, it was just tremendous.
Well, for that particular game, I had some reluctant potential sponsors at the game, Old Line Philly companies that weren't excited about hockey. In fact, when I invited them, they said, we're not really into soccer. And I said, wait,
that's the best line.
We're on skates and ice, you know. And so that game, when it's over, we're at the bar drinking, and they said, is every game like this? I said, absolutely.
Of course.
We hooked them, but things are pretty dismal now. But, you know, it's everything's cyclical. Right now it's just sick. But, John, the Spectrum, and you've been to the Wells Fargo Center. You and I have gone to Sixers games there and Flyers games and stuff. And it's different. And the fans, you know, it's a spaceship, casino, ocean liner, all galactic, everything rolled into one, but it's not the same. The Spectrum was loud. You were on top of the action. And that was even better for concerts. And I've mentioned on this show that when we opened the Spectrum, we thought the Flyers and Sixers and Circus and things like that would be the thing, ice shows. Turned out that concerts was as big or bigger than the Flyers or the Sixers as the years went by, thanks to Electric Factory. So you said Allman Brothers was your first one?
No, Jefferson Airplane.
Oh, Jefferson Airplane. Allman
Brothers. I saw the Stones. I saw, Jethro Tull three or four times. I was a huge Tull fan at the time. The whole Pink Floyd. I mean, the list goes on and on, because that was our venue. And you know, you had mentioned about that being such the musicians love playing there because of the acoustics. Well, you know, I didn't know any better. That was just our place, A, and B, it was the newest place in Philadelphia. So it was such a cool venue for all, you know, for obviously the sports, but the concerts were just amazing. And I cut my teeth going to see every major show that I could.
There was definitely a design difference with the Spectrum and the Wells Fargo Center, because the camaraderie with the Spectrum, you can't match that at the Wells Fargo Center. Yeah, the Spectrum was designed in a way, like you said, people hug in and high five in. I don't know if it's because of corporate, but just the layout of the seating, even at the, you're far away. It's like a distance thing in the Wells Fargo Center. So you do miss that when you go to other arenas in other cities where they have more of a tilt and a more of a closeness, you know, but it that's what you miss about the Spectrum, is that camaraderie.
It's not the same. And I will tell you, I spent a number of years living in St. Louis. They went from what was the Checker Dome to the arena, their old arena. When they moved into their new, it's the same thing. And I've traveled a lot. We catch shows when I was out of town, whether it's in Chicago or others. And you hear this complaint is pretty consistent. The new buildings, as nice and glittery as they are, and you know, obviously better access and this, that, and the other thing, but it just does not have that feel. Now I'm turning into my father about being the old guy, remembering the old days, but it's the truth. And that Spectrum was very, very unique, correct?
Well, you know, when the Wells Fargo Center, Core State Center, was named and opened in 96, Ed Snyder mentioned how many millions of dollars they spent on sound at the new building. He said, we didn't spend one dime on sound at the Spectrum. It just turned out.
Yep. It was just amazing. And of course, you know, you were on top of everything. And I didn't know any better. This was my time and my era, from between my late, you know, teens into my 20s, to go to concerts. Every city had their arena. The Spectrum was ours. And it was just outstanding.
What are some of the, and I know Lou mentioned, you've got some memories, or maybe you don't have some memories of a couple of the concerts there.
Oh, no.
Depending upon your age and how much you can volunteer here.
Don't ask me what I had for breakfast today, but I'll tell you everything from 40 years ago, and it'll be right on. Well, here's two in particular. One was Lou mentioned in the book, and I was there. It was a Chicago concert. It's 73, 74. So that makes me either a junior or senior in high school. And me and my buddy Murph, God rest his soul, he's passed on. We pick up tickets to see Chicago. And this opening act was this group's Bruce Springsteen. And, you know, everybody's restless and some smattering of booze. Now, at the time, WMMR was an outstanding classic
they
rock
were king.
Radio. Well, they were king. Classic rock, but that was one of the best stations in America. Well, you know, we would listen to, and I'm going to my friend Murph. I go, no, this guy's pretty good. I remember this song. We've been hearing this on MMR. So I was into it, because this was a guy because we drove around a lot, you know, just cruising, and had FM radio on. And so I was at that show. And then, you know, Springsteen actually turned out to have a pretty halfway decent career. But my favorite memory, and I mentioned this to Lou, was again, Lou had mentioned this term, a dance concert, and I'd forgotten all about that. And dance concerts were, an item where they sold the specific seats, but then they opened up the floor with no seating and was called a dance concert, but you stood basically, and it was a cheap ticket to get in. And let's see, Allman Brothers, and we are packed like sardines. And I don't know, when I'm 17 years old and probably a little overserved of a number of things. And
no.
Next thing you know, I'm not feeling so good. And I can count on one hand how many times I got an iron stomach. To this day, I'm 66 years old now. I never throw up, but this time I'm not feeling good. So the beads of sweat are starting. And then I can think, I don't know how much I'm going to hold this on. So I'm looking and I'm too far close to the stage to walk, to go back, to get out, to go to a restroom. My only way was to try to go towards the stage and make a hard left, go up the steps and find the lavatories. So I start moving and pushing, and people don't like that. But once you start saying, I'm getting sick, I'm going to throw up. Well,
puke.
There's a little Moses of parting of the sea there. So I had a little access.
That'll clear it out.
Now I'm picking up momentum because I'm holding down what's about to come up, and I'm now pushing, and I'm yelling every 5 seconds because people don't know why I'm pushing. Okay, I clear the space, and I'll never forget, security eyes me, and they think I'm rushing the stage, which I was, but not to get on the stage. I'm going to make a hard left. So I'm going and going, and I never get security coming down, and I looked at them, I said, I'm going to get sick. I got to get out of here, and I make them, so I pull this hard left right at that moat before the stage. And I start getting up the steps, and I was about a minute too late as I start relieving myself every fifth step up the step. And then, to make a long story short, I get to the restroom. By that time, I was already finished, cleaned up. I said, well, I feel pretty good.
I'll
go back to the dance concert. Unfortunately, one of Lou's helpers had to clean up a big aisle mess on whatever that aisle was up the steps. And
nice.
That's my story.
I've never heard of that dance concert thing. Lou, did you guys borrow that from somebody else, or did you guys invent
that?
Like the mosh pit?
Rector Factory started that.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So they started that, and it
became a fad. A lot of concert venues copied that. Very successful because you could get more people in than if you had seats. And if it wasn't too packed, you could actually dance. And John said, the tickets were cheaper. And it worked out really well. Electric Factory did some fantastic stuff.
That's amazing.
And I was telling my daughters, and saying that, and they never, of course, heard that term. And it's funny when you tell stories and say, well, make it up. Was I making this up, or did I hear an isolated term? But nope, it was in Lou's book, so that makes it factual.
If it's in my book, it happens.
Correct. Well,
and Lou, as you said, you've outlasted everybody else who can contest
Everybody's
any
dead.
Of these
Nobody
stories.
Can say no.
Yeah. So, John, I got to ask you. I went to some of the last two Springsteen concerts there.
Okay.
I didn't go to the Pearl Jam ones, but it really sort of brought home sort of the finality of the spectrum. I mean, what were some of your feelings when the end was near?
Well, it's interesting. I was living in St. Louis because my professional life took me out there, but I stayed a diehard Philadelphian. Again, pick up this crazy nickname and from a sports standpoint. And I would watch, I remember going to the Checker Dome and watching Springsteen with a quarter of the seats not sold, you know? So I watched it from afar, and it was sad. And I didn't get to know Lou until my last year or two living in St. Louis through a mutual connection. And that all kind of brought it all back. But it was, I guess, kind of like my father would have felt with Connie Mack Stadium or Baker Bowl back in the day. You get attached to stadiums. And of course I went to Connie Mack, but it was just an old stadium with a beautiful green field in there. But I didn't understand the magnitude of what Connie Mack, related to people of that age. So anyway, so I was very sad. And then I watch it getting demolished and the whole night, just like the Vet going down, you know, it takes a little piece of you.
You know, John, when the NHL expanded and St. Louis came in, they had an old arena there that was actually owned by the Blackhawks. And that's correct. Why they admitted St. Louis, because they wanted to palm their old stadium arena off on the new owners there. Yeah. And it was called the St. Louis Arena at first, and then it became the Checkered Dome. But you may not know this, and that's a kind of an interesting thing, that Purina dog food is based in St. Louis, and they were going to buy the arena and rename it the Purina Arena.
Yeah,
and I was rooting hot. For that one, because that's really a classic, but it never happened. It became the Checkered Dome.
Then it went back to the arena, and then they demolished it. And it's a nice office building. I was just by there about a month ago, right on Highway 40 there. They got their own new arena down closer downtown. But yeah, there's a lot of memories there. Correct.
Hey, John, before we go, I got to ask you, did you keep any old memorabilia or steal any old memorabilia from your time at the Spectrum?
No, I got it legally through Lou Scheinfeld, who...
well, that's a little sketchy.
I stole it.
Yeah.
And now I do have it hanging up prominently in my Jersey Shore home. And, you know, I have I don't know how extensive a collection, just personal stuff from what I collected as a young kid, but from the Spectrum, you know, a piece of the floor there and the Dasher boards and some of that Spectrum ice that's in a coaster. I got all that good stuff. You know, compliments to Lou, and it's you know, it's just again, great piece of my heart.
Excellent. Yeah, well, you know what we'll do, John, we'll have you back on, we'll have you do like the parade of stuff that you got from the Spectrum. That'd be cool as hell. Hey, Spectrum super fan John Pisa, thanks so much for being on the Museum Sports Show, taking a break at your golf game from Naples, Florida. Come back anytime.
Thank you for having me. It's so thanks, much fun John. To do this.
Good seeing you, man. Take care.
All right, see you guys. Bye-bye.
Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org or to make or you buy one of Lou's new tell-all books about the Flyers and the Spectrum and be part of Philly Sports Shrine today. A portion of the proceeds go toward the museum. When we come back, he's the only NHL non-goalie to win MVP after actually losing the Stanley Cup. Hopefully I got that right. Reggie Leach is here on the Museum of Sports Show. We come back on Talk 860 and Facebook Live after the break. We'll be right back.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Parent, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
To Reggie Leach, takes it over the line. Leach going to the back end, going for 5, score! Reggie Leach, 5 goals! What a backhand effort! Oh, ho, ho!
We're back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. Our next guest, you see him there in the Zoom box, was part of the iconic 74-75 Flyers Stanley Cup Championship team and set a franchise record for most goals in a season. A big Museum of Sports Show hail to the chief, Mr. Reggie Lease. Hi, Reggie. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Where are you joining us from?
I live on a place called Manitoulin Island in Ontario.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, I live on one of the res this year, which you call On Deck on the Conde First Nation, around 450 people. So I've been here for about 15 years.
So a lot of folks may have forgotten how you got the nickname, the chief. Refresh our memory, Reggie.
Actually, you know, I have to correct you here because I really wasn't called the chief. Bobby Taylor was when I was with the Flyers, but then I got my name, the Riverton Rifle from
Riverton Cazale, Rifle. Exactly.
And I really didn't have a nickname till I, came to the Flyers in, you know, in 74, but, my first nickname in the National Hockey League, believe it or not, was given to me by, I believe it was by Johnny Busick. When I went to Boston my first year, Busick was always known. So I couldn't have two First Nation people on the team. So they called me the Little Beaver at that time.
So, that's great.
Yeah, so that was my first nickname.
Well, I like the LCB line. That's my favorite of you guys. So.
Yeah, me too. I love it.
can you come out of retirement, please? I think we need you.
Oh my God. They're having a tough go. You know, it's something that they have to, in my opinion, is they have to just strip everything down and start from scratch. And they got to start doing stuff for the fans, not for themselves. That's my look on it.
Hey, Rich, I see you're still skating, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. Actually, I was skating a couple of weeks ago, just on one of the outdoor rinks here. So it's enjoyable still for myself. I'm on my way to Manitoba next week. I'm doing a hockey school with my son, Jamie, in one of the First Nation communities. So we're going to be in there for 3 or 4 days, and it's only minus 34 there.
And your son, Jamie, and hopefully I didn't get this wrong too there, Reg. Your son, Jamie, actually won the Stanley Cup with the Penguins in 92. Do I have at least that right?
Yes, you do. He actually won.
Thank God.
He won two cups with Pittsburgh. He was there. So, you know.
So you guys are doing this thing together. That's got to be pretty cool. Did you encourage him to sort of follow in your footsteps in the NHL?
No.
Or was that just happen?
No, he just, you know, I didn't believe in trying to get your kids to do what you're doing, because it's up to each, you know, everybody else what they want to do, right. What he likes. He was actually a great baseball player. He probably could have turned pro playing baseball, but he sure chose hockey because of, he's been in the dressing room since he's been, you know, 5 years old, with the Flyer dressing room all his life. He grew up with everybody, and that was his lifestyle. And he didn't know anything different. And he tells some neat stories of when we speak together at banquets and stuff like that. So it's I learned from him and stuff like that. Is that the great now is that I actually work for him. He owns the schools. I just come down and I do most of the speaking and everything else now. So it's so fun for me to put the skates on for 4 hours a day for whatever it is. So it's
Reg, it's Lou Scheinfeld. I'm so happy to see you, because you're part of the happiest time of my life, and probably the LCB line was something that'll never be replaced. But what was your first thought when you heard you were coming to Philadelphia? I know Joe Watson didn't even know there was a Philadelphia, and nobody showed up for our parade that first year. What was your first thought? Because the league had expanded, and all of a sudden Philadelphia is a factor.
Well, you know, when I turned pro in 70 with Boston, and Clarkie came back after his first year of pro, and he actually came to you. Well, we were in the finals playing in the Western Canada Hockey League, and he actually drove on the bus with us. He came back and and we were in the final still. He go on the bus for us, and we went to Edmonton, and we end up winning everything. And he says, Reg, says, well, you're playing, you won't have any problems, you know, making an NHL. And, you know, when I went to Boston, to me, it was a year and a half a waste of time of my life. Then I went to Oakland and that. But when I was watching the Flyers in 73 and 74, when they played Montreal, it took them to 6 games, I believe it was, and they lost out in the semifinals. And from there on, I, you know, at that time, I knew that they had a good club. I knew they were going to win it. You know, maybe the following year, which they did, they beat Boston out. And I believe I got traded in May of that year, right after the first cup. And it was the best news I ever had in my life, was getting traded here. And, excuse me, to me, it was tough. It was really tough because I was undisciplined for 3 or 4 years, you know, not playing in Boston, playing in Oakland, and not having any kind of a system there or any kind of direction. And then when I came to the Flyers, my God, it was like night and day. You know, I had to learn a system. I had to make sure I was part of the team and all this stuff. And I remember Clarkie saying to the press that I would have 45 goals in a bad year with the Flyers. And I think I had 4 or 5 goals at Christmas time. So it was pretty tough, but I got it on track after that. And you know, it's good. You know, I had some great years there. I had some bad years there. And, you know, my bad years today would probably make me 5 or 6 million.
yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Now you won the MVP here again. Relying on my crack staff here, my staff that's on crack. But that was in a Stanley Cup final that you guys lost, correct?
Yes.
I want to say maybe that's happened before, but I don't remember that happening.
It has happened before. Goaltenders have won MVP. I'm the only forward to ever win.
You're the non-goalie
on a losing hockey club.
Wow. Yeah.
What did that feel like? And was that a little bizarre?
Well, the playoffs myself was like bizarre. Everything I shot went in the nets. I always say to everybody, well, that was a year of no goaltenders. So I always, it was one of those things that, you know, when I left home and went to the rink, I knew I was going to get 1 or 2 goals. That's how positive I was and stuff like that. And, you know, and it's easy. You know, I play with the two best hockey players in the world. I still believe today, Bill Barber and Bobby Clark. I think we're still on probably the top 10 lines in hockey history still. Mm-hmm. And so it's something that, you know, our line clicked a lot because I was the goal scorer and Billy could score goals and check at the same time. And Clarkie was the overall player and he's the one that got us going all the time. So he got the whole team going.
Well, not too long ago, the LCB line signed autographs at the Dynasty Sports out at the Oxford Valley Mall. And I went out there and the line was forever. Line in Flyers history. There have been some great players since, but that line is, of course, they won a couple of Stanley Cups, which helped, or at least one. Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. The line went on forever. Out the door, down the hall, down the escalator, to the front door of the shopping center. And these guys were so gracious, signed every posed for so many pictures. It just went on forever. It's just never been replaced. And that's what we do on this show. We talk about the memories because a lot of people forget things. And as each generation comes along, today's generation doesn't know about the Flyers being a dynasty. They've heard about it. They heard about the bullies. We lived it. And what a blessing it was.
You know, we're very lucky, Lou. You know, for myself and yourself, you've been there on the good times and stuff like that. And I believe of treating the fans as we expect, because if it wasn't for the fans, we wouldn't be who we are today. And that's one thing about I learned as a kid is always respect, you know, your elders and people that are around. And even what I do today is that when I see somebody, they want to shake my hands or talk, I'll sit there 5 to 10 minutes and talk to him. And, you know, I'll get everything on hold and talk to you because it's more important to me for me to talk to this gentleman or the person or whatever it is and make them happen, because a lot of times that, you know, they never get to meet a National Hockey League player. And my life today, Lou, is I always tell everybody that I have accomplished more after hockey than I did during hockey. I made me a better person. I made a lot of mistakes as a pro hockey player. But the biggest thing is I learned from all my mistakes and moved on. And that's the difference in my life today, is that, you know, I have received so many awards away from hockey and stuff like that. That's makes me feel well, you know, feel really good. You know, I got the Order of Canada. I got an honorary doctor's degree now. I'm in you know, pretty well every sports hall of fame in Canada, except for the big one. So those are things that I'm proud of. I'm proud of all the things I did after hockey. Hockey to me was just a stepping stone of where I am today. It's like a learning program going to school from grade 1 to grade 12. You learn as you go along. And to me, hockey gave me that knowledge of what I had to do once I got out of it.
Well, that's, I think, amazing. There is a big difference with fans. Well, with the connection, fans back in the day had the ability to, you guys were approachable. Like, you guys were more personable. There was definitely a connection. Whereas we've lost that along the way. You don't have that now. Now the players are shielded. They're making, like you said, a lot more money. And you know, you talk about LC Lane in the ranking of the 10 lines throughout the history of the NHL. I know you guys got to be in the top 10. And it was for my generation, my age, when the Legion of Doom became, to see them getting, you know, when they brought LeClaire and Lindros back to get inducted in the Flyers Hall of Fame, and Renberg was there. It has to warm people's hearts when they see the three of you together again, because I know as a fan, when I saw the three of them get together again, that was amazing. Like, it just brought back the old time. So I'm sure when they see the three of you guys get together, it just warms the fans' heart to go, oh, that's such a reunion, you know?
You know, the thing is that it is great when people see us all three together, but my biggest thrill is that when Billy and I and Clarky get together and get away from everybody and start talking for 10, 15 minutes to ourselves and, you know, things that we used to do. And, you know, we never talk that much about hockey. We talk about today's life and how things going on and stuff like that. And I know for myself, you know, being in the AA program since 1985, Clarky just still checks on me all the time. So how are you doing, Reg, and all that stuff. So that's what we call lifelong friends. And that's, you know, even today, Clarky and I talk together a lot. And so it's, you know, I see him every summer and stuff like that. So it's something that it's a great memory because of you know, Clarky and I known each other since we've been 15 years old. So it's a great connection. And for the fans and for the, you know, like Lou was saying, is that we went through a stage of life, a decade of life where it was nothing but the Philadelphia Flyers in Philadelphia. It doesn't matter. I don't care. You know, they wanted one cup. I came along. We won the cup in 75. We went to the finals in 76. We went to the finals again in 1980. So those are the things that I'm very proud of, because I only spent 8 years there, I believe. But it was great 8 years. It was something that experience, you never get that experience of what we went through as not just a hockey team, but as a family, of how Mr. Snyder kept us all together as one big happy family. And then, you know, that, I think that was the biggest part, that how we won games. We weren't the most talented teams. We weren't the big, you know, we weren't. And we pulled things together, and that was it.
I just wanted to say, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Reggie Leach, Flyers great, otherwise known as Reggie Rifle. And to Susan's point, being so close to the fans back in those days, there was a bar called Rexy's over in Collingswood, New Jersey, I believe it was. And the Flyers would go there en masse after a game and drink and talk and sign autographs, and romances bloomed and other things. And it was just, that's gone. It's all gone in all sports now. Yeah. And it's a different time, different building, a different place. But fortunately, it happened, and it's a history book.
Well, part of that, Lou, also is that, if you recall, remember when Rexy's burnt down, and the next day we all wore black armbands around our practice, because that was our place. And even like Pat Ferriero, I think the guy's name that owned the bar at that time, you know, he looked after as well. And it was something that, you know, it's, I think every town has a place like that, but Rexy's was our place, and you know, you could never replace it. I remember coming from Oakland, playing in Oakland, and coming to Philadelphia, having to, and you know, after the game, we all end up at Pat's place at the Rexy's, because of that was the only bar there where everybody else went. So we followed it over. So,
hey Reggie, I got to ask you. You know, Lou has spent the better part of our, now going into our fourth year on the air, you know, talking and convincing us that he is truly a genius and a legend, and invented modern day sports venues, NHL teams. Was he really a legend, or was he a man to be feared back then?
No, he wasn't a man to be feared. You know, I remember Lou quite a bit there. You know, I wasn't in that group that he's always in, but I knew who he was, and you know, he's very respectful to everybody at that time, and you know, as you know, for myself being a young kid, and there he is, and he's tied up with Mr. Snyder and all that stuff. I thought he was actually part owner at one time, because he dresses like them and everything else. And,
oh, really? You know, so really? All, he probably told people, yeah, he was part owner.
But, you know, you can't, you know, I always remember Lou because of the way he treated the players, and how general he was with everybody. So that's he stuck out that way.
I was intimidated by you guys, especially in the locker room.
Oh yeah, that was our place. That was our space, Lou. Nobody fooled around with us then. So,
hey Reggie, before we go, I see you got a lot of stuff on the wall behind you. Did you keep a pretty good archive or library of memorabilia from your time, and maybe post hockey stuff too?
You know, I have a lot of stuff. I have, you know, it's not, a lot of it's not original. I had a lot of people that gave me stuff. A lot of people that sent me back autographed hockey sticks of mine. I just found my original 1980 All-Star jersey. So, you know, back then we didn't get our jerseys, like the 76 All-Star game I was in 1980, we didn't get it. You know, they always kept it. So it's something that even our Flyers, Flyer original sweaters, I don't have one of those, because we were never given that stuff at that time. You know, we it was Lou's fault, because of they didn't want to buy us two sets of sweaters for the year. We had to.
What a cheapskate, Lou. Good God.
How do you think we got
that's probably one of the ones, that's one of the ones that that Lou has hanging behind him there, Reggie. We need to get that for you and get it to you.
I'll tell you one story that I still sticks in my mind. Lou was there at the time. We were playing the Russians in 76, right? So we go in there, and meanwhile, nobody liked us. Campbell didn't like us. You know, the referees didn't like us. Nobody liked us in the league at that time. And I think they were all hoping that we would lose. So we go in there, and we call Mr. Campbell coming in the room. I'm not sure if you came in there, Lou, with everybody at that time. And as soon as he walked in the room, he started to give us his little speech. And I won't mention the player. One of the players says, "We know what we have to do, blank, blank, blank." And he left. He said, "You don't like us anyhow. We're doing this for ourselves, not for the league." And that was it. So those are the things that, you know, really little things like that pop up all the time as you go along.
Fantastic. So, well, the Riverton Rifle, Reggie Leach, we cannot thank you enough for being on the Museum of Sports show. And I keep threatening, and we're going to do it in our fourth year on the air. We're going to have an all memorabilia show where we're going to bring everybody on who's got some stuff, have our king of collectibles who comes on in the next segment. They've got the world's largest and most valuable sports collection, $35 million worth. Have them do some spot appraisals. And we just call it the shock the hell out of the guest on the show segment, Reggie. So we'll have to have you back on for that.
So does Lou own half of that?
Lou gets a little something off the top, little brokerage fee, little this, yeah. A little that. And again, Reggie, guys, thank you so much, man. You were wonderful.
Thanks for having me, guys. And Lou, nice seeing you guys. And you guys for thank you for asking me on. Take care.
Too much fun. Take care, Reggie.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, our king of sports collectibles with the world's most valuable sports collection right here on the Museum of Sports Show and Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun. Every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Susan Baxter and Lou Scheinfeld. The Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Up next, our king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable collection worth more than $35 million, and our partner in the Museum of Sports, Nick Depatche Jr., back from Disney World, right?
Yeah, and I got a few greetings for you guys. Lou, Olaf says hi.
Olaf, oh, wow.
Cool.
And then for Doug, I got a greeting from Mickey himself at
Chef. Oh, he remembered. I figured he'd meet so many people. He would never, you know, we met at a cocktail party and he's never going to remember me, Golly.
And then
we
got a special greeting from a secret admirer of hers, which will be not so secret, Gaston from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh
awesome. Susan. Okay. Yeah.
Are you on the market? Oh, wow. Oh, my God. So, Nick, I take it you got back in time to watch the Super Bowl. And as you watched the game unfold, did you see any potential collectibles? Did dollar signs start appearing on the screen? Or has stuff started tumbling out after the game as to what the collectability and value of some stuff would be from that game?
Oh, absolutely. And we're also going to see in the coming weeks, probably some players' game used memorabilia come to the market. In fact, actually, right after one of Odell Beckham Jr.'s jerseys from I think his first playoff, the first playoff game, the wild card round against actually became available, and he inscribed it Super Bowl 56 champion. And from the game that it was worn in, he put the stats. So that was the first sign of something related to the Super Bowl, even though it wasn't worn in the Super Bowl. Inscribed it Super Bowl 56 champion. So that was that's a cool piece. We did not get it.
Please tell me it's under $5,000.
Oh, well, I don't know. It hadn't sold yet, so I don't know what it is, but I'll keep an eye on it. We'll be seeing some game used memorabilia, probably not from the bigger names. Like Cooper Kupp is probably keeping his uniform, his jersey, his helmet. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he loaned it to the Hall of Fame. But we might see some players agreed ahead of time to put their jerseys or their helmets or their cleats up for sale. So we'll look out for that. If anyone threw any of their gloves, such as the gloves that the wide receivers wear or running backs, if they threw them in the stands, I would advise anyone who caught that to hold on to it.
Are you always surprised? And I think I've asked you about this with some other stuff that's turned up at auction or turned up for sale. Are you surprised at how quickly some things, you know, that you think would be very, you know, dear and sentimental to somebody who just won their first Super Bowl or just played in their first Super Bowl, all of a sudden it's up for sale? I mean, that's got to stun a lot of people.
Oh yeah, and I know that I have heard from athletes over the past that they are kind of hurt by it. Like they'll give something that they think is a good gesture to someone that they know, and then they'll see it sold on in one of the auctions or on eBay for whatever.
Unreal.
Yeah, it's not that they wish they had sold it instead. It's that like you're right, sentimental, that they gave it to this person and this person didn't value it the way they thought they should, the way the athlete thought they should.
Good Lord. The saddest thing to hear about athletes having to buy stuff back off the auction market, you know, years or decades later because of what you've just described. Or maybe they got into dire straits and had to sell stuff and then have to buy it back at a big markup. You mentioned that Odell Beckham wild card jersey. Would the value of his Super Bowl jersey diminish because he injured his knee and did not finish the game? I mean, does that make any difference at all?
I don't think it makes a difference if he had played the full game or if not. If he had won the MVP, then it would have been the jersey would have been worth a lot more. But if, say, he stuck out and finished the game, maybe he had like 100 yards instead of 53. Still had the two touchdowns. It depends, but I think that it's still going to hold its value. It's not going to obviously gain the value it would have if he won MVP, but it's still going to hold its value. But yeah, those players like him, Stafford, Kupp, Donald, Ramsey, those guys are going to be the and Whitworth, who had just won the Walter Payton Man of the Year award. His jersey had a patch on it that all the Walter Payton Man of the Year award winners wear for the players. But this might have been the only game he plays having won the award because he'll probably retire. So that will also be one of the most sought after. And also, like, don't forget some of the losing teams. Their jerseys won't be as valuable as if they would have won, but they're still going to be collectibles, especially for Bengals fans and people in Cincinnati.
Yeah, especially if it's another 3+ decades before they get back there.
Which, looking at the amount of quarterback talent in the AFC, Burrow is great, but it's so saturated with young stars like Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Herbert. I think Herbert's going to be the best of all of them for the next 5-10 years. It's not an easy pass to get back. Marino never made it back after he won the AFC in his second year as a starter. So you can't count on getting back there.
What about like Matthew Stafford's, and this may be a little bit of a reach, but his Detroit Lions jersey, you know, he languished with that team for the bulk of his career. I think made it to the playoffs twice and lost. And would his Detroit Lions stuff have any value now that he's won a Super Bowl with the Rams, albeit?
Yeah, his Lions memorabilia game used will get the same sort of bump up in price. Now it's going to peak right after the Super Bowl, and then it will come down a little bit, but still, his, in the long term, his Lions memorabilia is going to be worth more than if he had never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. I know, Lou, you've got some stuff, and Susan, you got some stuff for Nick.
All right. Nick, you just came back from Disney World, and what did you buy?
All the collectibles there in the Magic.
And I know you got a five-year-old son with you, so I'm sure you bought a lot of Mickey Mouse stuff.
Well, let's put it this way. The main attraction or artifact that we got, for lack of
artifact.
A better word. Yeah, they have Savi's Workshop in Star Wars Land, that's build your own lightsaber. And I went in with my son, because anyone under the age of 9, I think, has to have an adult with them. But he was the only one who built the lightsaber. I mean, it's a really intricate, like, it's kind of like a show along with something that like is interactive, and then you get a souvenir to go along with it. So they have you pick out the pieces of quote unquote scrap metal that you're going to use to build your lightsaber, and you choose what power he goes, defense and what was it? It was something and defense, but there's like that you could choose like the bad guys, powers, or you could choose like elemental or whatever. I don't know.
And what will something like that go for at the Golden Auction or at Sotheby's?
Well, let's put it this way: to build it costs a good $220. So $200 and $220.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
that's a hell of a souvenir.
Expensive lightsaber for 5 years.
But I got to ask you before we go. We had Reggie Leach on from the Flyers, and we chatted very briefly about what sort of memorabilia he had. Apparently, Lou stiffed him on sweaters and stuff like that, so he didn't have that. But he said he has his 1980 All-Star jersey. What would Reggie Leach's 1980 All-Star jersey be worth? I hate to hit you with that.
Yeah, I would say I would probably say you could probably get $1,500 to $2,000 for it.
That's not bad. I keep telling him that we're going to have you on for the scare the hell out of the kids. That is our time for this week. Time, you know, flies when you're having fun. Our king of sports collectibles, Nick DePaccia Jr., thanks for being on the MOS show. Maybe next week, can you bring that lightsaber on? Because we would like to see what a $220 souvenir looks like.
I could try to swing that. I'll see if my son will let me take it out of the house.
Yeah, I was just going to say, don't make him cry just to get it on the show. Nick, thanks so much, buddy. Hey,
all right,
everybody, don't forget to buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace, and get your custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org. It's available also where any fine literature is sold. Portion of the proceeds benefits the Museum of Sports. That's our time. We want to thank our guests, Lou's book superfan John Pisa, Flyers record holder Reggie Leach, and our king of collectibles Nick DePaccia Jr. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And make sure you go to themuseumofsports.org to make a contribution or buy Lou's book. We need your help now more than ever. For Lou Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, I'm Doug Shimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Lou.
These are the good old days.
And they really are. See you next week, everybody.
These are